Good afternoon, everybody. I'm John Ashby, Divisional Emergency Planning Officer from Gatwick. I've been doing that job since 2002. I've carried out various other tasks in the police at Gatwick. I'm employed by Sussex Police, so I'm the emergency planner for Sussex Police at the airport. But I've worked very closely with the airport owners, my counterparts in there, and my counterparts in all the other organisations that work at the airport. This presentation it was put together quite a short notice, but I'm going to break it into three distinct areas. It's going to be a little bit detail about the airport, then a short input on the emergency planning structure at the airport, and then I'm going to really focus on the survivor reception process at the airport, which has evolved over the last couple of years. So that's who I am. Now, for the eagle-eyed of you, you'll recognise that as Gatwick Airport, but you'll also recognise that there's a mission there, in that there's no Pier 6. I think it's cutbacks in aviation and et cetera, and I don't get such up-to-date flyovers pictures now. It's the busiest single runway airport in the world, and that's the highest number of movements we've had on that bit of tarmac, 896 movements in August 2008. So we really do sort of try and squeeze them in. And that equates to approximately 49 movements per hour maximum. That's how many passengers put through the airport currently. The previous owners, BAA, were aiming to put 40 million through by the year 2010, but because of changes in the world, that wasn't achieved, but that's the number we're putting through at the moment. And it's already been aspired to. It's like having a small town, 32,000 staff in summer. Gatwick Airport Limited, GAL, they're looking at 2,000 staff. Now you'll notice that police, 140, quite a small number, and we'll come back to that in a while. It's the seventh busiest airport in the world, and as you know, second largest in the UK. And that's how much investment is being put in over the next decade, 850 million. And a bit of history there, we've got the first dedicated rail link. And we're on the, as you can see, running down the right-hand side of the picture there, the main line between London and Brighton. And just actually to the right of that, we've then got the M23. So we've got a nice lot of potential problems on us. And the airport operates 24 hours a day. Anyone met this man? Yeah, hands up who's met this man. Yes. Mark Scoggins is a solicitor advocate. And this is where I'm moving now, away from details about the airport, more into emergency planning. And he set out some ideas a few years ago. He defended the Metropolitan Police in the Menendez shooting. But I use this as what he set out as arguments to say why we should plan for emergencies, why we should be very honest about our capability of things. And he sets this out. Is there an event or series of events which are reasonably foreseeable? You think airport is massive. Have you contingency planned to cover those events? Are people trained to operate the plan? Do they do what they're trained to do? If you answer yes to all those, then you can sleep quite quietly, you know, peacefully at night. But if any of those answers is no, you haven't actually thought about it, then he's the sort of person who will rip your, not only you, but your company to pieces in a public inquiry, a criminal court, potentially. Very entertaining man to meet, though. This, it looks complicated, but it's just to show that where I sit and where the airport links in to the Sussex Chief Constable. He's right at the top there, and I've sort of set it out as, everyone familiar with gold, silver, bronze setup? OK. Okay. Chief Constable, he chairs the Local Resilience Forum, so that's across Sussex, and it comes down, you've got the Force Emergency Planning Officer sitting at Gold there, sits on various groups such as Flood Warning, Utilities Group, Sussex Interagency Training Group, lots and lots of groups he gets involved in. He's like my second boss. I've got him as a boss, but I've also got the Chief Inspector Operations Gatwick. He's just underneath him there. So I've got two bosses pulling two directions. And the Chief Inspector Operations Gatwick wants me to be totally focused Gatwick. Well, in emergency planning, if something goes wrong, I'm going to need assistance from the force. I might even need mutual aid. So I need to have very clear and joined up plans so that assistance can come in and help at the airport. There's me right at the bottom, you know. I think there's a story behind that being at the bottom. But I chair the Gatwick Resilience Support Group. I also sit on the Planning Operations Group. But those cross-reference a lot of times. We used to have three distinct groups. We've now amalgamated those groups into just those two. And what we've decided is, if we need a specialist task carried out, don't keep having meetings and meetings and meetings. Identify who needs to be involved in that development, or that plan or process, and actually set up a small working group. Set that up, set direction, which is set by the Gatwick Resilience Planning Group, which oversees the structure of the working groups at the bottom, and give it a specific task. Give it a specific task and get things done. Once that task is finished, close the group down. When you set up one of those groups, you might find that you need extra expertise in there. We can bring people in, or you can take them out as you choose. But you can actually, rather than going round and round in circles, you can actually achieve something and then move on. One, the other year we had a tunnels working group, and it wasn't about escaping from Gatwick. It was about the tunnel under the South Terminal, which was a security issue with that tunnel. The makeup of these groups, you've got the Sussex Resilience Forum, and the airport owners sit on that so they can see what's going on within Sussex emergency planning wise. And obviously we're all involved in directions from government about how we should be planning and what we should be looking at, horizon scanning constantly to see what threats are coming. But then it comes down to the Resilience Planning Group. Now, when I started, we didn't actually have Surrey Fire and Rescue, Surrey Police, or Surrey County Council on there, which worried me, and I'll come back to that, and we have a look at another map. But I've now got those opted onto there. And as I said earlier, when we meet, we have to be honest. It's no good me going along there and saying, yep, we as police, we'll cover that. We cover that at 7 o'clock in the evening or 10 o'clock in the evening, knowing that I've only actually got 12 officers on duty. Because that's the reality of it. Sometimes we'd be as low as 12 officers. We've got 140 police officers. They're split over five shifts. And there's ones like me that's sitting in an office polishing a seat all day. So not all of them are out there dealing with the public. So it starts reducing your numbers down. I've already discussed the working groups at the bottom there. This is a map of Gatwick. It's in the middle. Obviously shows the RV points. But the blue dots to the north and the red dots are what was produced some years ago from one of these groups. And they're encompass points. When we get a full emergency coming into the airport, these points go on. The red ones are covered by Sussex Police, not Gatwick officers. We haven't got enough to cover these points. So the red ones are covered by Sussex. The blue ones are covered by Surrey. Because I've got a pointer pin. Is it that one? That's all right. I'm going to shoot somebody in the eye with it. Yeah. Right. The Surrey-Sussex border basically goes along like that. So Gatwick is a bump on the top of Sussex. So as soon as an aircraft takes off going west or going east, is over Surrey. Surrey Police don't have a lot of resources out here. If an aircraft crashes here, overshoots a runway, it's in Surrey. We've got an MOU with Surrey that we would respond. Sussex Police, Gatwick Police would respond. And they would deal with the incident until such time that Surrey Police are in a position to take over. That's for counter-terrorism as well, and major incidents such as air crash. So it's understanding the capability of what we can and can't do for each other when you've got limited numbers. Main roles. Put these up quickly. Outside on normal divisions, I would suggest that the way those are set out are completely reversed, in that you're dealing with operational policing. That's your number one priority. Serious and organised crime, number two. Major incidents, and then counter-terrorism. At the airport, it's completely reversed. That's why we're there. That's why we're there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and we're armed as well. Not all of us, but we've got our armed capability, because the government says that's the biggest threat from counter-terrorism. Secondly, they want us to be able to respond to major incidents. I thought I'd put a picture of aeroplanes up there. I actually took that photo. It's an A380 and A340 at Farnborough Air Show. And again, the size of the aircraft is getting bigger and bigger. If we have one crash, how are we going to cope with 12 police officers? If we have two crash, we're going to have to work in partnership with all the other agencies. And so it comes back to being honest. I expected that to happen to me, actually. It's about being honest about what we can and can't achieve. I'm now going to move on to the SFAR reception process. And the phrase people before process was one that my ex-chief superintendent coined when I went to him about 4 years ago, where I wanted to change the way we dealt with this process. And he said, John, what you're trying to do is put people before process. And detailing who's survived an air crash, who's died, who's injured, where they are, falls to the police. It's a nasty process, but it's our responsibility. We have to do it. And if you talk to senior investigating officers, got to do it, but we can do it in a soft and caring way. Three distinct areas: SFAR reception, reunion, and friends and family. The Police Casualty Bureau, I'm not going to go into great detail about it, but that's the collating area for all the information. So all the information we receive will go into there. Because if we have a major incident, a casualty bureau number will be given out. If it's a Foreign and Commonwealth Office, an incident abroad, a casualty bureau will be set up in this country. And at the moment, regions are taking turns in doing that. The Air Afrique incident, where there was a crash in Tripoli, we had the onbound part of that journey into Gatwick. And I had a phone call from South Wales Police because they wanted to know what information we were going to be requiring from people arriving at Gatwick on the onward bound leg of that journey. But if it's something that's happened in this country, say at Gatwick, it'll be Sussex Police running the Casualty Bureau. They won't be doing that in isolation. They'll be using Kent Police, Thames Valley Police, Surrey Police, Hampshire Police, and they'll all be answering on the same number and be answering it as Sussex Police Casualty Bureau. I'll put this right up. Right, we have an incident at the airport. If there's people injured, we get off to hospital. hospital teams will be deployed. Again, not from Gatwick Police, they'll be local to the hospital that's receiving those injured. And those hospital teams will carry out documentation of who's arrived and feed it back into the Casualty Bureau. The mortuary, that slow time, we won't worry about that. Reunion area, I'm going to come on to that in more detail in a minute. And EPIC, Emergency Procedures Information Centre over at Heathrow, if it's an airline contracted to EPIC, will also feed into our Casualty Bureau. So you've got the crash accident site. As I've already said, hospitals. How many people can get a major air crash? How many people, seriously injured people, can hospitals realistically take in the southeast? Any ideas? Come on, talk to me. Any ideas? 20. Sorry? 20. You're looking at about 4 per hospital. That's a reality. 4 per hospital. There's not the massive safety buffer, safety margin of empty beds. You're looking at about 4 per hospital. And that's with cancelling operations, et cetera, of people that are already in there. Mortuary, I'm not going to go into that because I don't see that as part of what I want to get over today. Survivor reception is what I'm going to focus on. So I'm going to focus more on this side, the survivor reception or SRC process. Got the incident scene. People will go through triage. And the walking wounded, you'll want to get them onto a coach as soon as possible. You want to get them somewhere safe and secure. You don't want them wandering around the airfield. You don't want them falling down electrical ducts or into drainage ditches. You want to get them into some safe location. So our people are taught that, right, day like today, doesn't matter if it's wet, rainy, sunny, get control of those people. If they can walk, get them on a coach. And the triage on the coach might be just an ambulance officer walking up and down saying, you're right, you're right, you're right. That'll be as far as the triage is concerned. But you're trying to control the people that have come off that aircraft. Obviously, those who are laying injured will be triaged by the ambulance service in a different way. Casualties who have been triaged by ambulance service will go off to hospital. And again, fatalities, they're not going to get any deader, so they're going to stay there. They're not going to be moved. It's going to be slow time. Survivors are going to go to our survivor reception centre. And if they're not being met, onward travel will be arranged by the airline or handling agent. If they're being met, they'll be taken to the reunion area. I know you call it reunion centre, don't you? But we call it reunion area, because we're different, you see. But if we do have an incident at the airport, you're going to have friends and family turning up. Whether it's departing flight and they've heard something on the radio and returned to the airport after dropping off their loved ones who are going on a flight, or if they're waiting to meet a flight, people will start asking questions at the airport about what's happening to the flight. Our intention is to get friends and relatives reunited. And to be honest, to get people on onward travel. I was going to say as soon as possible, but I don't mean that. It's not a race. So about 3 years ago, I changed the process how we would do this. There's a number of forms that are needed to be filled out when people come into the SRC areas. And those forms I felt were being completed in an impersonal way. And it very much, when I first started doing this job, was you came in, sit at that table, first form, name, John Ashby, address, date of birth, right, next table, because you've completed the survivor evacuee form. You then got a slight continuation form for more details for details about onward travel. If I was travelling with somebody, and they're not, no longer with me, they're not in the Survivor Reception Centre, then I've got to complete a missing person form. And that goes on quite a few pages. And then best practice says I should complete an air accident investigation branch form about the crash. And at that time, it was very much, right, come here, sit this over, right, OK, name, address, move on, next form, name, address. And I thought, how would I actually want to be treated? I wouldn't want to be treated in that way. I'll leave it hanging there for a minute. The areas... I just wanted to talk about the responsibility, and I'll come back to how we've changed moving away from sitting down at tables. Main area of responsibility, police. We supervise and coordinate the area. Because don't forget what I said earlier, going back to, it's our hard-nosed job to find out who's died, who's injured, where they are, and who's survived. That is our key task. That is our duty to find that out, and obviously to investigate crime. And we might have the suspect in the group or involved in the incident in some way or another. So we're the glue that holds these areas together. Bearing in mind we've got 12 officers, so we're very thinly spread. We've got task cards, which actually details. So if I go over there, I can actually say to somebody, right, this is your job, you need to carry out this task. I won't do that in isolation because I will talk to the other supervisors from the other agencies that come along there, whether they are the handling agents or airline staff, because they know their staff better than me. They might have somebody who's very good at using fax machine or using some sort of computer system, or they might have somebody who's very fast at completing carbonated forms, or somebody who's very good on the telephone, or all three. So the police, we will provide staff for documentation, if available. We will use whoever we can, anybody we can get hold of. And I've put this on all the slides, care for all those involved. And I don't mean just the people that are coming off the aircraft, because it's about looking after each other. You know, the pressure's going to be on, and it's going to be very emotional. And, you know, I've had to deliver death messages and things like that in the past, and it is very draining on your, you know, you try to be professional. So caring for all those involved. Gatwick Limited, the terminal management set out the areas according to the plans. And if it's British Airways, they fly into the north, they know instantly. And we get this, full emergencies called, they will start making those areas available as set out in the plans. Even on a full emergency, we police will start seeing what staff we've got available to start sending them to those areas, putting the wheels in motion to deal with the potential incident. They provide security of the areas. And, as I said earlier, care for all those involved. Airline handling agent, they've got an interest in these people. They are their customers. They want to show that they are going to care for them. They want to look after them. I guess provide staff for liaison, provide staff to assist in documentation, care for all those involved. Caring services. West Sussex County Council, they've got a statutory duty to care for people that have come off, been involved in this incident, like ourselves. But it's not about fighting about who's going to look after them, who's going to put their arm around them. Should it be the airline? Should it be the county council? Some people might be quite happy to talk to the county council, give their details to somebody from the county council. They might not want to talk to a police officer because they've had bad experience with a police officer before, or they might not want to talk to the airline because the airline is potentially injured or, worse still, killed one of their loved ones. So Let's see what works best for the individuals involved. Also, we've got the chaplaincy and travel care. And I put here that they provide all that. But I think, you know, most importantly, on those previous slides as well, it's about caring for each other to deal with the incident. The Air Afrique incident, I think we had 180 people come off that flight. And in the morning, we knew the flight was coming in, and it was deemed that we may have people on there that have been affected by the crash in Tripoli, because it was landing in Tripoli, then taking off and going on to Gatwick. We also thought that we may have some friends and relatives turning up to meet the flight who may have not heard of the incident or be in a distressed state. So very early in the morning, I spoke to my counterpart in the airport and we discussed it. And he said, right, we set up a friends and relatives reception centre, which is in staff canteen, cleared that up, so that was ready to receive any people who were inquiring about that flight. The flight came in about 1 o'clock, but before that, at probably about 9:45 in the morning, I got a phone call from Virgin. And they said, John, because they know me, they said, can we help at all? I said, I think the flight's coming in later on this afternoon. Can you just tell me how many people you've got available if we need to document everyone coming off the aircraft? I said, yep, no trouble. And they got back to me and said, yep, we can supply about 20 people. Fantastic. I said, right, hold fire, because I talked to the senior officers at headquarters and see what their considerations about documenting the people on this aircraft. And it was deemed that everyone should be documented to see if they had any involvement or had any relationship to people that had been killed on the crash. So, yeah, fair enough. The aircraft landed. Air Afrique had one member of staff based at the airport. That's all I had. I had some people from the handling agent. I can't remember who it was. I can't remember if it was Service Air or somebody like that. So we had 20 from Virgin. We had police, probably about 15 police. And we had caring services, travel care came along, and some people from the handling agent. And rather than sitting down with each one individually, what we did, and this is the change, we say, right, we've got... say we've got, say, 20 staff available, and you've got 100 people coming off a flight. What you would do, you would divide those 100 people up, and it might be that as a family group of, say, four, or a group of six friends travelling together. I will then take enough documentation, or officers, shall I say, or officers or airline staff or handling agent staff will take enough documentation to actually deal with those six people or those four people in a group. And if it's me, I'll get our documentation, I'll go and introduce myself, I'll tell them who I am, and I'll take them through the whole process. So I'll start having a relationship and a friendship with these people, and I will take them to... meet them in one gate room. The supervisor will explain the process that you'll be given one person. I will then take them into the next gate room and I'll sit down with them. And if it's an English group, mum and dad might be fine at filling out their own forms while I fill the children's out. But it's working together. If they need to go after the loo, I can show them where the toilets are. If they need information, I can find out information for them. If they need to get hot drinks or food, I can arrange that. But they've got a single point of contact. And what happened with the Air Afrique flight, we had certain people on there that couldn't talk English. For instance, there were two ladies who couldn't talk English. There was two men who could talk English, and they could talk the language that these ladies could talk. So we put them together in a group. And I think they're happily married now. No, they're not. But it's working out what works best for these people that have... I know the Air Freak wasn't a crash, but if we're talking about a crash, they've been through a horrendous experience, and suddenly we want to sit them down at a table. No, let's do it a bit slow time and deal with them how I would want to be treated by having one individual looking after me and taking me through the process. And what we do, we explain the process to them in one room, we take them into the next gate room where we do the documentation, and then we move them into a third gate room, which is basically just a waiting area before they are taken forward to the reunion area for onward travel, or where they're reunited with their friends and family. The three areas, that's what they are. But what we don't have is friends and family, or police and friends and family, talking to fire reception, or vice versa. Everything must be coordinated and gone through the yellow section, the reunion area. The reunion area is the key to it all. So what happens, when the forms are completed, they are taken, whether friends and family have completed a missing person form, or survivors have completed their survivor form, they are taken to the reunion area, where they are paper matched. They are also copied and sent off to the Casualty Bureau. So Casualty Bureau input all that information electronically. Historically, when we've done this in the past, the reunion area always identifies the matches before the Casualty Bureau. So they will call up a match, they will find Mr. and Mrs. Ashby. Mr. Ashby's in the survivor reception, Mrs. Ashby's in the friends and relatives. They will send a message to the Casualty Bureau that they've identified that those two people are related and can be reunited. They'll send a message to the Casualty Bureau saying that they're going to be reunited. Casualty Bureau say, yep, go ahead, reunite those people. And those people will be brought together in reunion area. And then they'll be allowed to go on their way, which the onward travel is arranged by the airline or handling agent. Obviously, that is in consultation with the senior investigating officer, because if it's a crime scene, that person has got to deem that he or she has got to say, yep, they are free to leave, because it may be that it's a crime investigation going on. So that's what we're aiming for, onward travel. Get them on their way. And these are the forms. They are quite straightforward. You know, there's lots of talk. These are national ones. I think they're 2008, I think they were changing. Yep, 2008. They're a national form. I think Heathrow's are slightly different because they tend to do things slightly differently. But there was lots of discussion about should we have survivor at the top? You know, should we have the word survivor? It always spells out that if you're filling out a survivor form, there's people that have not survived. And there was lots of debate about that, but national form, we're told, you know, that's what you've got to go with. So that's the survivor evacuee form. That is carbonated, so there'll be a copy for police, there's a copy for the airline, there's a copy for social services, and a fourth copy as well. Family Reception Centre, again, a missing person form, again changed in 2008. And they are quite intrusive. They're not as intrusive as the disaster victim identification forms, which go into great detail, but still about four pages, mainly tick boxes once you get past the front page. And those forms are matched at the reunion area. And if somebody is reporting on the left-hand side somebody missing from friends and relatives, as soon as that form goes into the reunion area and is electronically sent to the Casualty Bureau, it might be the Casualty Bureau flag up that that individual is at a hospital, because the hospital team has sent in the similar information into the Casualty Bureau. So that's where those links are made. That's just where our So our reception centres and reunions are around the airport. And that's photos of the north, the one to the top left there, is where they would first come into. And it's very good. I know it's got windows either side, but the airport, you know, I've requested blinds, and they've got blinds now, so they drop down, and so they're in a private environment as soon as they come into those areas. And all the equipment and paperwork that we need is stored in the end cupboards. Oh, there's a very large cupboard that runs right across there. In that area as well, we'll have a medical team. They are not there to treat injuries from the crash, but you will normally get people who arrive in these areas who've got twisted ankles and things like that. They can accommodate that. But it's more for people that, say, suffering from angina and they haven't got their medication with them. So that will be cared for in that area. You then move on to smaller, more, cosier areas where you can actually break out with your family group and just sit them down and do the documentation, which has to be done. We are trying to find out who's died, who survived, and who's injured and where they are, after all. The communications link, I've already spoken about, but that is fundamental, that Savoy Reception talks, if they need to talk to their friends and relatives, which they shouldn't do, but everything goes via the reunion area. There's no cross-linking. And the reunion area is the only one that talks to the Casualty Bureau. And EPIC will feed into the Casualty Bureau. And emotions, you know, it's we have to be very strong at times dealing with people who are extremely upset. But we do that in partnership, and we do that by supporting each other. We run contingency plan exercises very regularly. I get involved in approximately 50 a year. And one of those round robin sessions, we have to run them five times because they have five teams. They're very police orientated. But one of them is about Savoy Reception. And what we do, where there is a crossover, we will invite other agencies along to those contingency plan exercise days. And we've had City Airport come up and look at our new process, and Heathrow come up and look at our process, and they're quite impressed by it. But on the last round at the beginning of the year, where we did Savoy Reception, we had a massive turnout from the airline organisations across the airport, because they want to be confident and feel able to know what the process is and feel comfortable doing the job.